We found a lot of litigation, a very large sort of lawsuit machine that it's unclear whether anybody running the place had a full appreciation of what was going on. We found over the six-year period we looked at, there were more than 36,000 lawsuits against former UVA Medical Center patients, and the combined amount sued for was more than $100 million.
That's kind of an astonishing statement that you think people at the top might not have known this was going on?
It's speculation on my part, but it was sort of decentralized. The legal work was split up between independent attorneys and the attorney general's office. The process in the courtroom was very perfunctory. Most of the folks who get sued don't show up, so there's a default judgment against things. Some people don't even know, if they don't get served, that this is even happening to them.
And I assume when people get these big bills from the university, maybe they just throw up their hands and say, I can't pay this. I'm just going to ignore it and hope it goes away. But what were the actual consequences in terms of what UVA was able to achieve by taking people to court?
At the very least, when a case gets sent to collections, your credit is downgraded. That all by itself can affect your personal finances. It can be hard to get a loan. Your interest rate might go up. But it goes far beyond that. They can take people's life savings. They can take the equity in your house when it finally gets sold. They do not initiate foreclosure on primary residences, which is something to say, I guess. But if your credit gets downgraded enough and you can't refinance your mortgage and you can't pay the bills, then the result turns out to be the same.
Right. Now, in the markets where we broadcast, we have Sentara Hospitals, Mary Washington, Carilion, VCU. How do those hospitals compare with UVA?
Well, we looked at their financial assistance policies, all of which are more generous than UVA's. UVA Medical Center had an extraordinarily difficult financial assistance process to qualify for. You had to have income below 200% of the federal poverty level. And so for a family of two, that's in the low $30,000. And you had to have assets below $3,000 or $4,000 or so, including equity in your house. If you could not qualify for either of those benchmarks there, you did not qualify for financial assistance. So we interviewed one family who lived south of Charlottesville, down near Lynchburg. She needed some back pain injections. She didn't realize that she needed a pre-authorization to obtain them at UVA Medical Center. Bill was $10,000. Her husband is a cook at Hardee's, and they don't make a lot of money. And he had $6,000 in his Hardee's 401k account, and that disqualified them for financial assistance from UVA.
And how did UVA compare with some other major medical centers that are affiliated with universities? I know you looked at Johns Hopkins and Yale.
We found that UVA Medical Center lawsuits far exceeded some of these other centers. There was a report a few months ago about Johns Hopkins, and it indicated that Johns Hopkins Hospital was suing something on the order of 250 or 300 patients a year. UVA often exceeds that much in a single week.
Does UVA offer any charity care? And if so, how much?
Oh, they do. They told us that I think 9,700 patients qualified for financial assistance in the last year. They write off a lot of bad debt that's just simply uncollectible. But they also are accounting for what they say is charity care in a not very reliable and, I would argue, inflated way. As a lot of people know, hospitals have these very high sticker price gross charges. You might see this on your explanation of benefits that you get from your insurance company. It'll say that the price for your MRI scan is $3,000 and your insurance company reimbursed $500 for that. Well, what UVA does is account for its charity care according to the gross sticker price charges associated with those patients that no insurance company ever would have paid. So they told us that they do $320 million in charity care each year. We found that they actually would have been reimbursed only about $80 or $90 million for that. And of that money, they're reimbursed for almost all of it from state and federal programs intended to cover indigent care. So out of their pocket, they put very little.
What have the courts said about these lawsuits? When people go into court with UVA, do they ever object? Do they ever argue that they shouldn't be required to pay? And what has the judge said in such a case?
It's very rare that people try to fight back. Essentially, it's a matter of contract law. When you go to the hospital, no matter how sick you are or how out of it you are, you sign what amounts to a contract that says, I promise to pay whatever this procedure and my admission ends up costing, even though I have no idea what they're going to do to me and I have no idea what these items cost. And that is deemed by courts across the land as a binding contract. And it's really hard to get a judge to say, well, because you didn't know and all these other extenuating circumstances, there's very little precedent that carves out any leeway for medical debt, even though these kinds of liabilities are very different from, say, a business contract or a mortgage contract that you might sign with your lender. It's really a different kind of thing, but the law treats it as this sort of cut and dried business proposition. Even though no one in their right mind would agree to sign an open-ended contract like that unless they had great need of care or thought that their insurance company was going to cover most of the procedure. Some folks just don't have insurance. A lot of folks, you know, there's still, even with the Medicaid expansion in Virginia, there's going to be hundreds of thousands of people who are still not covered by any insurance. But even a lot of people who have insurance can run into these kinds of problems because, as a lot of people know now, what passes for insurance is kind of patchy. Sometimes we have these high deductible plans where you have to pay $5,000 out of pocket before the insurance even starts paying. Sometimes we have narrow network plans where you have to stay inside the insurance network, and if you go to the wrong hospital by accident, suddenly it's not covered. Some people we talked to had short-term health insurance plans. There's supposed to be sort of bridge coverage between real insurance. If you have a few months, you know, between comprehensive insurance, you can buy these things. A lot of times they're mismarketed by folks as being real Obamacare compliant insurance. And guess what? They don't cover pre-existing conditions. And so people buy the policy and they find out too late that whatever sent them to the hospital isn't covered. They might get in financial trouble for that reason as well. You know, one of the typical reactions when you tell people about this is, well, they should have had insurance. Well, a lot of folks did, and even the folks who didn't, a lot of them just, it's hard to afford it because even with the tax credits that the Affordable Care Act gives, it's still very expensive for some families.
Right. The other thing that you pointed out in your article is that there's a difference in terms of what people are charged if they have insurance. For the same procedure, they may be charged something else if they don't have insurance.
Yeah. It's really crazy. Now, UVA says that it adjusts for that by giving self-pay patients, i.e. uninsured patients, a 20% discount off of their sticker price charges, and then it gives another 10 or 15% for prompt payment. But almost anybody without health insurance is not going to be in a position to promptly pay. And even if you account for both of those discounts, you're still not getting down to a level where UVA typically gets paid for a typical case. You know, generally, UVA gets paid 30% of its sticker price charges, and they're still only giving people 20% off the gross price. And we worked with independent analysts that looked at some of these cases, and one gentleman who is a custodian at a community college there. I think it's Piedmont Community College in Charlottesville. He had a sore throat. He knew he didn't have insurance, but he wanted to get treated. He figured he would just pay cash for it. How expensive could a sore throat treatment be? He went to the UVA Medical Center emergency room. They gave him a CT scan for some reason, and the bill ended up being $6,000. Of course, he couldn't afford it. They sued him. He lost. And we had analysts look at his bill, and they calculated that a commercial insurance company would have paid $990 for the care that they're charging him $6,000 for.
Wow. Now, UVA is a nonprofit, doesn't pay taxes for that reason. So does the medical center have money left over at the end of the year? And if so, what are they using that money for?
They're enormously profitable. They have $1 billion in the bank, in their endowment. And we're not talking about the UVA University endowment. We're talking about medical center, UVA health system only money. In a good year, they'll make $150 million. Sometimes they write a big check and send it to the university or the medical school. They can afford to do that. And what do they do with it? Go look at the campus. Go look at these fabulous new buildings that they're making. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but they have a really, really big capital project. That's part of where they're spending the money. They're spending a lot of the money on a huge billing and collections department, which sort of makes all this happen in the first place. And they're spending a lot of money on executive salaries. We sought the CEO of Virginia Health System's employment contract, and she's going to make close to $1 million a year in a good year.
One of the most powerful things that you wrote is the individual cases that you described. And it turns out that the medical center goes after its own employees and even after University of Virginia students who have not paid their bills.
It's hard to imagine that if somebody were to design this system from the start and knew what was going on and what the consequences are, that this is what they would come up with. But they regularly sue their own employees. They apparently very frequently block UVA students from enrollment if they have an unpaid medical center bill. You know, we talked to one young man who was hoping to graduate in 2015 and is still paying off a UVA medical bill and is hoping to finish his degree next year, 5 years later. There are 20 students now with medical debt holds on them who are going to have trouble completing their classes until they pay off those debts. You're not going to be able to complete your education until you pay this bill, which, by the way, you know, as we discussed, might be much higher than it should be.
Right. And one of the particularly sad stories involved a woman named Shirley Perry. Can you tell us about her and what happened there?
Yeah, Ms. Perry, whom I did not know, was a nurse at UVA. I interviewed her mother briefly. She became chronically ill, and she became no longer employed at the medical center, and she ended up needing treatment there and was unable to pay, I assume because she had lost her coverage along with her job, and ended up being sued for six figures and unfortunately passed away last year, but she had a townhouse that she lived in there, and that, of course, went through foreclosure proceedings, and that was sold off last month. I should say that it's unclear whether UVA got any of the proceeds that came from that. She had a first mortgage on the property, and UVA's interest would depend on whether there was anything left over after that.
Right. And then there was a case of Heather Waldron, who is quoted in the story as saying, UVA has ruined us. Tell me about her.
Heather Waldron and her ex-husband, John Hawley, just had a nightmare situation. They are both insurance agents, registered insurance agents. She was a registered nurse. They understand the system. They understand why health insurance is important. And some weird thing happened to them at the beginning of 2017 when they were trying to buy health insurance. She got left off the policy, and they didn't know it until after she required emergency surgery for some really severe intestinal challenges. And the debt ended up being $164,000. They tried to protest it. They never figured out why the policy didn't take. They were working through healthcare.gov as well as the insurance company software. And she was extremely ill all through 2017. And the dad was trying to take care of the family with five kids. And they were trying to deal with this at the same time. And everything just kind of fell apart. Their marriage fell apart. They're in the process of losing their house. They moved out of Blacksburg and have a lot of challenges.
What, if anything, has UVA had to say to you about any of this?
They've said that they are in the process of revamping their financial assistance and maybe their litigation policies. They've said they'll announce something by the end of the week. The governor gave us a fairly bland statement today saying he's, I believe he used the word concerned about this, but no indication of what he's going to do, if anything, to try to fix it. So we're sort of waiting to see what's going to come out of the medical center. CEO Pam Sutton Wallace, you know, has not agreed to an interview. The UVA Board of Visitors is meeting later this week, and so, you know, we'll see what they do.
And the only other question I wanted to ask pertained to VCU, which I gather is maybe just as strict about financial aid, that their rules are similar to those of UVA?
It looks like it. They're pretty similar. They made theirs slightly less stringent to qualify for financial aid in July, you know, sort of knowing that we were looking at this. I don't know whether they did it because of our investigation or whether they were going to do it anyway, but the timing certainly coincided. I think they will very much be part of the process. It's hard to believe that UVA will make any changes in its policies without VCU Health doing the same thing. They're both state health systems. They tend to notify state officials of their charity care, indigent care, financial assistance policies in a joint letter every year. So I think they will probably be very much part of this process, even though they weren't the ones that we looked at.
And do we know whether they file an undue number of lawsuits?
We don't.
What led you to focus on UVA in the first place?
We got tips. We have Facebook sites and we're active on social media. This came out of a suggestion more than a year ago from someone who noticed higher than ordinary degree of legal activity in Charlottesville and suggested we go look at it. So we did.
Yeah. And when you were in court, it was pretty astonishing what went on.
It almost looks like a UVA Medical Center billing office. There are billing office representatives there to help you set up a payment plan. The day I was there, there were no lawyers in court. It was simply the billing people, and they give you a timetable to set up a plan. And in any event, even if you agree to a plan, for the folks that I was with, it ended up in a judgment on your record, even if you did agree to a payment plan. UVA, you know, we should point out, you don't get to court and you don't get approached by a billing representative in the courtroom until many, many months have gone by. There are rules about how soon you can start collections, and then even after that, the litigation takes a while. But it does happen, and it does have consequences.
Yeah, and in your story, you pointed to a woman who actually accepted one of the payment plans, but was then making her payments through her credit card, on which she was being charged 22% interest. This is the kind of thing that you saw.
Correct. This is Carolyn Davis, whose husband works for Hardee's and who was disqualified from financial assistance because of his 401k plan. A lot of families, the answer is bankruptcy, because that wipes everything off the books and you can start from scratch. But if you file for bankruptcy protection, that has enormous consequences. And it's kind of a routine thing in Charlottesville. You know, we spoke to bankruptcy lawyers in Charlottesville and surrounding areas who, you know, this is a big piece of their business. And not all of them are happy about it. They see the injustice on a routine basis of people who come in and who've just reached the end and can't handle these bills.
How long did you and Elizabeth Lucas work on this project?
We started work last fall. We spent lots of time in Charlottesville at the courthouse. We relied pretty seriously on some database work that was done by a young man named Ben Schoenfeld, who is a volunteer for Code for Hampton Roads. He lives in Portsmouth, Virginia, and he noted that it was really difficult to collect Virginia court data in bulk to subject it to the kind of analysis that we did. And he took it upon himself to write Python code and scrape, you know, dozens and dozens of separate Virginia district and circuit court sites to put all this in a database so that it could be looked at by people like us. So we started there, you know, maybe late last year, and it turned out that even that data was missing a lot of the information we needed. So we spent time at the courthouse doing data entry down there, as well as sitting in the courtroom talking to defendants there and so forth.
Well, for all of the time and effort that you put into this, and it's certainly an important subject to look at, we thank you, and it'll be interesting to see how the University of Virginia Medical Center responds. Jay Hancock with Kaiser Health News, who worked with Elizabeth Lucas on a terrific report about how the university goes about attempting to collect on bills that the medical center has sent. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.